One country ramping up its COVID-19 contract tracing is New Zealand, which has already been heralded as one of the success stories of this pandemic. Enforcing a strict and early lockdown, the country of 5 million kept its total confirmed cases to under 1,200 and total deaths to 21 as of May 19th. But the island nation's wealth and natural isolation also played a big role in keeping the impact low. Tuesday was the second day in a row where the country saw no new reported cases of COVID-19. And the country is moving this week into a new phase where many of its restrictions are being lifted. Schools are back in session, as are retail stores, restaurants, bars, gyms, libraries, and beyond. Earlier this month, when Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern explained what this new Alert Level 2 will look like, she announced this.
You no longer need to stick to your bubble. You can begin seeing family and friends again. We do want you to hang onto the same principles that we are using generally in hospitality, issues around space and hygiene and contact tracing. If we have large-scale events held in people's home, then all of that becomes harder. That is why at Alert Level 2, we are saying that you can have friends and family over to your home, but keep the numbers small.
Here on The Takeaway, we've been checking in with different regions to find out how COVID-19 is affecting them in unique ways. So today, we go to New Zealand with Sarah Robson. She's a senior journalist at Radio New Zealand based in Auckland, and she's with us now. Sarah, thanks so much for bearing with the time difference and joining with us.
Thanks so much for having me.
Okay, so Sarah, New Zealand does have a few characteristics that have helped keep the virus relatively at bay. Geography, population density. Your country was, in many senses, set up for success from the start of this, right?
That's right. I mean, New Zealand is an island nation. We are so far away from a lot of those hotspots where we saw COVID-19 take off. But New Zealand moved really quickly in those early stages, back in early February when we first saw the outbreak in Wuhan. New Zealand was one of the first countries to actually put in place travel restrictions out of China. And it wasn't until late February that we actually had our first case, which was a returning traveler from Iran. As the cases took off elsewhere around the country, those travel restrictions just ramped up more and more and more. Jacinda Ardern announced restrictions that basically meant everyone coming into the country had to self-isolate for 14 days. And from there, you know, cruise ships were banned. And just 5 days later, New Zealand's borders were completely closed to everyone but citizens and residents. Jacinda Ardern had to make some really important calls about the next steps to contain it and eventually stamp it out.
Was one of those next steps testing and ramping up a testing program?
Yeah, that is part of it. In the initial stages, the case definition was quite limited. And they had to, if you thought you might have had symptoms, you had to have a link to a confirmed case or have a recent history of overseas travel. But eventually, as the virus was starting to spread and there were indications of community transmission in New Zealand, which was one of the big alarm bells, that testing definition was widened. The message from Jacinda Ardern was fairly clear. If you've got the slightest sniffle, a bit of a tickle in your throat, go out and get tested. And since that has happened, testing numbers have increased quite rapidly, and there's no lingering spread of the virus within the community. Our last case of community transmission was back in early April. All of the subsequent cases have been linked to previous cases, or there's been a history of overseas travel. So there's nothing, officials and the Prime Minister are fairly confident there's no COVID-19 lurking out there undetected.
That's quite amazing. What was the difference, do you think, in terms of the capacity for testing? I mean, we've had issues here in the U.S. and just in terms of the number of tests, people have not been able to get tested even if they were ill.
Yes, certainly in the early stages, there were a lot of concerns about New Zealand's capacity to test, like a lot of the rest of the world. But since then, we've had the drive-through clinics, community testing facilities. Out even in rural areas, we've seen mobile testing clinics because health authorities, again, they just really wanted to make sure that there was nothing happening out there that they didn't know about. The virus wasn't spreading out in more remote parts of the country amongst our indigenous Māori population, which are an incredibly high-risk group. In areas of Auckland and South Auckland, where there's a lot of overcrowding and lower income families, they really needed to make sure that COVID-19 wasn't getting into communities where the spread could be absolutely devastating.
And one of the ways that they're trying to keep the second wave from coming and to maintain this relative stability in terms of preventing COVID-19 and the spread is with contact tracing. So there's a brand new app for contact tracing. Is that right?
Yeah. So it's in its very kind of early stages. I think they wanted to get this app out, encourage businesses to sign up. It's effectively a digital diary. You sign up for it, you enter some of your personal details, and then you will literally just scan a QR code when you're going into a cafe or any other place that you're heading to. That means you've got a record of where you've been, who you might have been in contact with. So if there is a case of COVID-19 and you may have been there, you'll get a push alert to your phone. Or if you end up being confirmed with COVID-19 and you give permission for those details that are recorded in the app to be shared with contact tracers, they will be able to contact anyone you may have been in contact with. 92,000 people of a population of 5 million have signed up for the app so far. They're just getting the word out there to businesses now. So I think we will see uptake increase, I guess, as it becomes more widely known about and more businesses get on board with it. But in the meantime, some businesses are using different QR code systems, different online systems, but some places are even using an old-fashioned pen and paper and collecting details like your name and your phone number on a sheet of paper at the front of the store to comply with those contact tracing requirements.
Sarah, you mentioned Indigenous people in New Zealand. Can you give us a larger sense of what's going on with that population right now?
Yeah, so this has been a really important piece of, I guess, the COVID-19 response. The Indigenous Māori population is overrepresented in a lot of poor health outcomes. Māori are also overrepresented when it comes to unemployment. We've heard a lot over the last few weeks. There's a lingering memory of what happened to Māori during the 1918 influenza pandemic. Obviously, hugely affected by that. And because of that lingering sort of memory and its effect on communities, ensuring that Māori are prioritised in terms of testing and, I guess, a lot of those measures around prevention, getting the messaging out there. Health authorities have really had to work on how to make sure that COVID-19 isn't getting into these remote, poorer, rural, not often with the best health kind of facilities or having to travel a long way to get to see a doctor. So one way that Māori tribes, or iwi as we refer to them here, in more remote areas, they set up their own checkpoints on roads during the lockdown with the support of the police to make sure people coming into the region were meant to be coming into the region, that they weren't, I guess, sort of holiday makers or trying to get to batches or holiday homes. So that was, I guess, one of the effective ways that iwi, local Māori, were able to, I guess, protect their own communities. There was a huge effort in terms of making sure that there was testing happening in some of those more remote Māori communities, and really ramping up, working with iwi Māori leaders to make sure that the messages were getting out there to those communities, to making sure families knew about it and were aware of, you know, physical distancing, the importance of hand washing. The focus now goes on, I guess, the economic recovery and the impact that, the broader fallout from COVID-19 is going to have on Māori in terms of their employment, their housing, jobs, their general well-being, access to health services, those sorts of broader, wider societal issues that are always present because of, you know, colonization and the way systems have operated over decades. Māori are often at a disadvantage when a crisis like that hits.
Can you step back for a second and give us a sense of the economic toll that New Zealand has experienced from COVID-19 so far, and how the government has supported the country in terms of backfilling any sort of economic needs that have occurred because of the virus?
The government here acted quite early. Back in mid-March, we saw a $12 billion recovery package announced a huge focus on looking after the economy, knowing that we are going to go into a recession and a downturn. As part of that, the government has expanded a wage subsidy scheme. Now, that has been a 12-week payment to employers who were likely to lose revenue because of COVID-19. It was supporting wages for employees, and that scheme has so far paid out just under 11 billion New Zealand dollars, and about 1.6 million jobs are being supported by that scheme. Now, I think this is where, when that scheme runs out, that we're going to see the real impact in terms of job losses in New Zealand. We have seen a big increase in the numbers of people going on to our unemployment benefit, but authorities, officials are really expecting, I guess, a second wave again of people losing their jobs, facing redundancy, and needing that income support from the government.
Sarah, I wanted to ask about something that there's been a lot of talk of here, and that's about how countries that have been faring best amidst this crisis are those led by women. Now, that's a complicated thesis, and there's a lot of factors at play, but many people have really commended Prime Minister Jacinda Ardern on her leadership. And I was just wondering if you think there's anything that other countries can learn from her about how to manage a crisis at this moment.
I guess when you reflect on the last, I guess, just over 12 months in New Zealand, we had the terror attacks in Christchurch and now COVID-19. And I guess for a new prime minister, these are two huge, huge things to I guess, deal with so early on in her term of leadership. What's been really, I guess, apparent during COVID-19 and again in the response to the Christchurch mosque attacks is Jacinda Ardern's focus on kindness. One of the big messages at the start of the pandemic was be kind to each other, support one another. We are a team of 5 million. We are staying at home to save lives. And what's interesting as well is there was actually a recent poll that asked people whether they supported the lockdown measures. And that poll found about 90% of New Zealanders supported the lockdown measures. So I think it says a lot, perhaps, about Jacinda Ardern's communication style. We've had these 1 o'clock in the afternoon press conferences with Jacinda Ardern and our Director General of Health, Ashley Bloomfield, who himself has become something of a hero to many members of the New Zealand public. They have together, I guess, clearly laid out the threat posed by COVID-19 and the actions that have needed to be taken to reduce that threat, to deal with the pandemic, and I guess to control the spread of the virus within our country. And I think because that has been so clearly explained to the public in a way that hasn't scaremongered and it's sort of carefully laid out the facts, it has managed to get the vast majority of New Zealanders on board with measures that we would have probably never expected to have taken 3 months ago. The fact that the country almost entirely voluntarily went into a 5-week lockdown, I think, is a testament to the way the risks and the threat posed by COVID-19 has been explained and outlined to the general public. And I guess, you know, Jacinda Ardern has also relied on the science, on the facts, hugely on the advice of Ashley Bloomfield and all the other officials at the Ministry of Health. It's been a really, I guess, measured and grounded in the science and the realities of what's happening and taking a really good stock take of what the impact would be if action wasn't taken. So decisive action, but with a lot of kindness behind it.
That's an interesting contrast to elsewhere that I'm sure historians will want to study in the future. Thank you very much. Sarah Robson is a senior journalist with Radio New Zealand. Sarah, really appreciate you bringing us this report.
Thanks for having me.
There's a lot going on right now. Mounting economic inequality, threats to democracy, environmental disaster, the sour stench of chaos in the air. I'm Brooke Gladstone, host of WNYC's On the Media. Want to understand the reasons and the meanings of the narratives that led us here, and maybe how to head them off at the pass? That's On the Media's specialty. Take a listen wherever you get your podcasts.